April the 8th, 2011, here on Gerwick.net. Steve Gerwick, and I'm welcoming him to the line today. A great interview with a man who really needs no introductions, a man from Texas who these days you'll find in Florida running his wrestling school, a former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, a member of the WWE Hall of Fame, the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. Today I welcome Dory Funk Jr. How you doing, Dory?
Good, Steve, and it's a pleasure to be on your program, and I'm thrilled to be on Gerwick.net. It's the place that I go every morning to get my latest wrestling news, and I just want to let you know that every day, multiple times here at the Funky Conservatory, we're looking at Gerwick.net to get our information on professional wrestling.
Well, we do definitely appreciate that, Dory. And as we said, we do appreciate your time today. A very busy guy running that Funky Conservatory down in Florida. Right up front, tell us about the training school, how it came to be, and maybe about the classes and the production you have down in Florida currently.
Okay. Actually, I've been in training wrestlers all my life. It began back in Amarillo, Texas. I had the opportunity to work with a lot of the West Texas State University football players that came along into professional wrestling, then over to Japan, and I trained a very famous wrestler that did a terrific job, Jumbo Tsuruta. Later, I went to WWE, where we had the WWE Funky Dojo, and some tremendous wrestlers came out of that, including main eventers on WrestleMania, Edge, Christian, Kurt Angle, the Hardy Brothers. They just did a terrific job. And we came here to Ocala, Florida, and opened up our own wrestling school in the Funky Conservatory. And we have a terrific bunch of kids here right now that really do a great job. Since our marketing is through the Internet, they come to us from around the world. For instance, on our last show, we had wrestlers Shintaro Ikeda from Japan, Jose Salinas from Ecuador, Leo Cristiani from Spain, and all of our terrific kids here that are working so hard at the Funky Conservatory, including who I think is one of the best referees in the business, and she's our women's champion, Claudia the Claw Reef.
Yeah, and two, tell us about the website, because I know if anybody's interested in training with Dory, you can go to the website and get all the information. Where can they find more information about your school?
Really, the easiest way is just to go to Google or Yahoo and just put in my name, Dory Funk. It'll bring up our website. The website is dory-funk.com. That's not hard to remember either. we have an interesting website, and it contains all the information about our wrestling school and a lot of historical information about my career in professional wrestling itself, including, oh my gosh, 500 or 600 videos are on the site right now that include my career in Japan, much of what our wrestlers are doing here at the Funky Conservatory, and his historical stuff on professional wrestling.
What typically, describe a training session with the students, and then in general, how long do the students stay with you in completing their training?
We have a 3-month program, and we think that ideally it's good to have a wrestler here for a year or 2 years, because in all honesty, it takes that much time, and I'm talking about someone coming from that has not been involved in wrestling before, but it does take some time to become a really good worker that can be an asset to a wrestling company, and that's what we're all about. We focus our training here at the Funky Conservatory on 3 things, and number one is for safety. And we like to train our kids to where they're able to enjoy themselves in the ring and do it in a safe way. We work hard on television. And we think television performance is critical in the wrestling business. because they are television performers, and we worked very hard on in-ring performance, and that's the actual wrestling moves and things that they'll be doing in the ring.
What's your thoughts on, you know, the current training situation, say with WWE, where they have one territory that's down your way in Florida and Tampa with Florida Championship Wrestling and Steve Kern? They don't have affiliations with any other wrestling groups. They used to have OVW with Danny Davis in Louisville. They used to have an affiliation out in California, one in Atlanta at one time with Jody Hamilton. But really, they only have one territory now, and they have a group of, I don't know, 80 to 100 wrestlers under contract, and a lot of them don't get a lot of the ring experience they need. They bring them to television very quickly. So what's kind of your overall thought on how WWE currently trains their wrestlers and brings them along to television?
I can say everything that WWE is doing is highly successful. They've got a large crew of new performers, and incidentally, I had the privilege and honor of going down there for several months and working with all of the members of NXT that are currently with WWE. And I just think they do a terrific job. I'm not privy to where they're going in the future or things like that, but WrestleMania was a tremendous success. It was a great show, and I think they do a terrific job. Incidentally, we work hard on television here at the Funky Conservatory, and it is in preparation for WWE because WWE has the finest television production in the world. And I just think they do a great job.
I want to ask you about you know, the current product, WWE and TNA, but I wanted to also ask you, has there ever been any reach out from Vince or even TNA to maybe work with your school as kind of the official training school of one of the two promotions?
Well, with me personally, that last year I was with WWE down in Tampa with FCW, and it was on a 3-month deal, and had the opportunity to work with a lot of the guys that you see their stars right there right now. Previously, before coming to Ocala, Florida, I was working for a year and a half with WWE, what we called the WWE Funkin' Dojo.
Right.
And just some terrific kids came out of there, including Christian, Kurt Angle,
Hardys.
Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And subsequently, Lita came out of here in Ocala, Florida.
In fact, I want to ask.
She was the our first star that came out of the Funky Conservatory here.
And you know, along with your Bang TV reports and some of the shows you do, you sometimes bring in some of the well-established divas or knockouts in wrestling. I know you've had Awesome Kong and Gail Kim, and just most recently Mickey James you worked with. What was it like working with her?
Yeah, actually, Mickey, she trained here at the Funky Conservatory in Ocala, Florida. And she went direct from there. She fought her way into the wrestling business and became a superstar for WWE, multi-time world champion. But we like to bring in stars. It's a part of our training. I mean, when these kids get to work with Awesome Kong and Mickey James and Rob Van Dam was here recently, like you said, Gail Kim, James Storm, it really gives them a look. It gives our kids in training a look at what the wrestlers really are like. And they learn that they're very giving people, too. All of the people that have made it big time in the wrestling business, and we're thankful to have had a good portion of them down here at the Funky Conservatory.
Now, WWE just brought back a reality show called Tough Enough, which is, I believe,
right,
is the fifth season of it. It's kind of a crash course into professional wrestling training. But they've had a few people go through Tough Enough that actually ended up on WWE television. What's kind of your opinion of Tough Enough? And is that maybe a good way to find a future WWE superstar?
You know, I think they've got a a good show format, I'm going to say this year. It's very much like Dancing with the Stars, which is hugely popular. And I think the format that WWE has evolved into with Tough Enough is going to be successful. I think it's going to be very successful this year. And I did watch the show, and it did hold my interest.
Do you keep up on the current, obviously you do because with your students there, but what's your overall maybe opinion of the current product, say in WWE or TNA, and maybe from a wrestling standpoint? Because it seems like obviously with Vince McMahon and WWE, they're going more towards sports entertainment. Do you feel like what you grew up on and old school wrestling maybe has kind of fallen by the wayside more towards sports entertainment?
Oh, I think any time it becomes more sports entertainment, there's opportunity for legitimate wrestlers. And any time that the business becomes too wrestling-oriented, then there's opportunity for sports entertainment. it was kind of that way. I mean, when I was NWA World Champion, there were all these different areas, and I would go into a town and be featured on the main event. But before I got in the ring, there would be death matches, chain matches, anything that they could do to excite the people. But by the time I got in the ring, the wrestling fans were ready for some real wrestling. And it was hugely successful. And I think the wrestling swings back and forth, and I think it always will. In some ways, it's the same business that it has always been, because the idea is to bring the wrestling fans back and to sell products. And I think the wrestling fans kind of dictate how the wrestling business is going to go. And WWE has some absolutely terrific athletes. So does TNA. And well, for that matter, so there's the Funky Conservatory down here in Florida. But I think the ones who are really willing to make the commitment and go for it, I think the ones that are there have all done a terrific job.
What do you kind of think?
A good bunch of them are kids that have came through my program.
What do you kind of think of? I know you're you know, I consider you like an old school wrestler from back in the day. And what do you kind of think about when you hear them say sports entertainment or the sports entertainment business? Is that not
I like what Ric Flair calls it. And every time Ric Flair does an interview, he speaks of this great sport, professional wrestling. And right. I look at it that way, but that doesn't make me feel bad about how anybody else wants to present their product. And changing it to sports entertainment has had its benefits for WWE.
What's your current thoughts or opinion of TNA wrestling?
Man, I watched their show the other night, and they did a good job. I thought it was the night before, but I thought they had an exciting show, and they brought it to a conclusion that would keep the wrestling fans interested.
Along the lines with current shows, products, what's your opinion of mixed martial arts, and are you a fan of the UFC?
Yeah, I'm a fan of UFC. I like to watch them. I was an amateur wrestler myself way back in the beginning, before I became a professional wrestler. And I like to watch them. I think they have a good product. And I think they're doing a very good job promoting it. They're not over-marketed, but they draw extremely well when they come with the pay-per-views.
Do you have a current favorite fighter or two that you would like,
no,
you would like to watch?
No, I haven't done that deep end because I get started watching, and then all of a sudden Marty wants to watch Desperate Housewives. So I have to change the channel.
You have to wrestle her for the remote?
Brock Lesnar, I guess, is the only one that I would be familiar with because of his relationship with pro wrestling.
You don't wrestle Marty for the remote, do you?
Oh, absolutely. That's the biggest, That's the biggest fight in the house. Especially during Super Bowl time.
I want to take you all the way back to your West Texas State days, and I was just talking to you flying about, obviously you played college football there, and a lot of great professional wrestlers of I guess maybe the era before really came from there. You had Dusty Rhodes, Tully Blanchard, I believe Manny Fernandez came from there. Maybe recollections on West Texas, the history of West Texas. I know you played football. And along the same line, did you ever really have, when you were playing football there, did you have aspirations of playing professional football?
I gave it some thought, and I actually, when I was playing football at West Texas State University for the last 2 years that I was there, I was married with children, and it was very tough. And as soon as my football eligibility was over, and in those days you could not play football and a pro sport, I turned to professional wrestling and made a good payday in my first match. And there were scheduled matches all down the road, and I never looked back. I just went on. And at that time, professional wrestlers and NFL football players were basically earning the same money. And it's interestingly enough, with the consolidation of professional wrestling, today the professional wrestlers are making tremendous money, right in line with all the other sports. And it's more of a consolidated business than it was back in the old days, because in the old days there were 34 territories with scattered across the nation with three wrestlers in each territory making a good living. But now with our television situation, the national television the way it is, it's a professional wrestling is the more limited venue, but they certainly do make the huge salaries when they do make it with WWE, TNA, and or Japan.
Right. I guess I should mention, as I was teasing you about wrestling Marty, your wife, you should mention your wife obviously is involved with what goes on there with your school, and obviously with the Bang TV product. She does produce Bang TV. So we should mention that she's definitely has her hand involved in what's currently going on there.
She's producer of Bang TV. She is the person that handles the television production, and she's also involved in the writing for all of our Bang TV programs. The truth is, we both share everything.
That's the way to do it.
When you combine what the two of us do, including internet television and everything, we basically do it all and have a ball doing it.
Real quickly, back to West Texas, and I know you just had a famous alum of West Texas come your way, a guy that you were a big fan of. You're telling me offline, Tully Blanchard came down.
Tully Blanchard. I was a big fan of Tully Blanchard. He played football at West Texas shortly after I left. And I was wrestling in Tampa, Florida with my brother Terry. And West Texas University came down to play Tampa University. At the same week, Terry and I were wrestling the Briscoe brothers at the Sportatorium. So we cut combined promos for wrestling and football. And West Texas came down here and kicked the hell out of Tampa University, and my brother and I came down and kicked the hell out of the Briscoe brothers the same weekend. So.
I want to ask you about your relationship with Terry. How often do you see Terry? Does Terry ever come down and maybe visit the school?
I see him often, and we're talking to him right now about coming down to visit the school. And when we were talking about wrestlers that I trained, I always forget. But heck, I deserve credit for training Terry Funk. He's my younger brother.
So. Right. And I think you should also mention the million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase.
Oh, Ted DiBiase, great football player from West Texas State University, and has done a terrific job. He's also the man with the golden voice.
And I know you helped train him as well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, yep. Went to the gym with him and worked out with him. And Ted DiBiase's father was Iron Mike DiBiase, who's a tremendous friend of the family, of my father. And it was through Terry and myself that Ted actually came up to West Texas State University to play football there.
Now, obviously, your father was Dory Funk Sr. Were you and Terry destined to be professional wrestlers, or did you and Terry actually think about maybe doing something other than professional wrestling?
Actually, I was going to school playing football and working on a concrete crew at the same time. And when you consider the car that I had and where I lived, and turning the buck on my very first professional wrestling match, there wasn't much choice. It was just a happening that took place. I did spend some time before I turned pro talking to my father. And he is my trainer. He is the one that I patterned my work off after. And he told me some things about professional wrestling. He says it can be a very good business. It can be good for your family. He said it can be good for your body. He says professional wrestling can keep you healthy. If you live clean and work out and exercise and train, it can be a great sport. And it worked out that way for me. And, I would encourage anybody else that professional wrestling is not only, a way to make money, but I think it's the best aerobic activity that you can engage in is to go in the ring and wrestle for an hour, which I did a lot of times.
You kind of stole my next question, because I was going to ask you, what was the best piece of advice your dad gave you for the wrestling business?
Protect your business. Take care of your business. It has been good for your family, and it will be good for your family. And he should always take care of it.
Now, you, I believe you have also a son named Dory, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Did any of your children have aspirations going into professional wrestling?
No, they didn't. My son is, a doctor in, Colorado. And, my daughter is, a teacher just outside Amarillo, Texas. And my other son is with the Amarillo school system in the administration. My grandson did come up, and he is Dory Funk the Fourth, and he did come up here to Ocala, Florida, and he did train with us through the summer. And he's on video on our website and did a terrific job.
Okay. I want to ask you, Sir Oliver Humperdinck was a manager of yours at one time. Obviously, you had some great legendary managers, Gary Hart,
right.
The Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, and
I wanted to
get your kind of reflections on Sir Oliver Humperdinck, and then a little bit about just professional wrestling managers in general.
Humperdinck was just a terrific guy. He was very nice, very pleasant person to know. I didn't get to know him personally real well. I had in having him as my manager, that was on a few occasions down here in Florida. But he was one of the nicest guys in the wrestling business that you'll ever meet. And always a pleasure to see, and I do miss him.
How about any memories of Gary Hart?
Gary Hart went through a famous airplane crash, of which I wrote a full story about. That's on my website somewhere. You have to search. You have to search to find it. But
there's a lot of information at dory-funk.com. Definitely check it out.
Gary came through an unbelievable story surviving that plane crash up in the Carolinas. And he told it to me personally what he went through, and I've recorded it all.
That's awesome. And just in general, there's been so many great legendary wrestling managers. We just saw Precious Paul Ellering inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. We've got Jimmy Hart and Bobby the Brain Heenan, and it seems like in general the era of professional wrestling managers have fallen by the wayside. What's your thoughts on why that is happening, and is there any chance we could see maybe a resurgence of managers?
I think there will be a resurgence of managers probably when a great worker comes along that is not that good a speaker. but managers were a part of the wrestling business, and the people that we worked with, especially back in the old Amarillo territory, the Sheik was our superstar, and he never said a word himself. He always had a manager when he was down there. I think managers serve a fabulous purpose in the wrestling business. We actually train managers, but we also want them in the ring wrestling so that they know what it's like to be there. And I think there will be a future for managers. I'm not sure about TNA. I know WWE does not use managers extensively. I guess they do some. But there was a time when, Saul Weingroff was the other one who was manager for the Germans down in the Amarillo territory. Did a terrific job for us. J.C. Dykes also. Do you remember him?
Yes, I do.
Manager of the Infernos, who were a great team for us and drew lots of money in the Amarillo territory.
Yeah, it seems like kind of in the 90s we went towards more valets rather than managers, and it seems like there's so many green guys that come up on television or guys that are maybe good workers but not necessarily good talkers, and it seems like there's still a need for managers. So I'm glad to hear that you are at least training maybe the next generation of great wrestling managers.
We also, the other side of it is our kids have to talk on television every day. And we use our video for training purposes. All of it doesn't go up on the internet. But we do television every day down here at the Funky Conservatory. When they finish their matches, they're required to go cut an interview immediately, either for our upcoming show or about the match that they just completed.
Now, another thing is kind of in recent years fallen by the wayside is tag team wrestling. And, of course, we on GirlWick.net, we just did the greatest tag team tournament. You and Terry did very well in it. Of course, until you ran into the Hart Foundation, I had a little trouble with them guys. But I want to ask you, just in general, you know, I love tag team wrestling. You know, I grew up watching some great tag teams. I think back to the 80s was, you know, watching the Killer Bees and the Hart Foundation and Strike Force and obviously you guys and the LOD, and just there were so many great tag teams. And it seems like today, it just seems like, you know, tag team wrestling is pushed to the side, that there really just isn't any great tag teams because they don't keep them together. What's your opinion of tag team wrestling? And do you think also tag team wrestling could make a resurgence a la wrestling managers?
I think they both can make a resurgence. During my career, some of the most fun times I had was tag team wrestling with my brother. And then I had the honor of in St. Louis and in Greensboro, North Carolina, for that matter, tag teaming with my brother and my father. And that was father and two sons tag teams.
Wow.
That was a real privilege. And I think it can be attractive. WWE is going to market what they feel like the fans are looking for. That's what their business is. And if it's at the present time, if it's not tag team wrestling, I think it will come back because I think fans like it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it.
You can bet they'll have their fingers on what fans like.
And I think back to like the Crockett Cups of the 80s and the real leagues that you were in All Japan. I mean, some great
tournaments. Sure. At one time, North Carolina was known is a tag team territory. In fact, the word used to be, don't go there unless you got a tag team partner. That goes way back. So. But things change, and it's basically the wrestling office and what they feel like will do the best job of satisfying their paying customers, the wrestling fans.
Now, we just had an interview with Road Warrior Animal, and I asked him, obviously, they won the tournament, the greatest tag team tournament, and I think most people in wrestling today obviously consider them the greatest tag team of all time. And then I asked him, you know, I'm not going to ask you who's the greatest tag team. I said, who is the second greatest tag team? And he said the Funk Brothers.
So. I appreciate that very much. I'll return the favor. I think they were the second best tag team. I hope he thanks me for that.
I was talking to Dory about some of the matches that you can find on just on the internet in general and YouTube. And there was a match I saw with you and Terry against Road Warrior, Animal, and Hawk. And then there was also a great match from Japan. You and Terry were battling Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody, and I was telling Dory, great match. It was 25 minutes long, and the only thing I didn't like was the commentary is in Japanese, and then Dory pointed something out that's so true, that you don't need the commentary. What the story in the ring these guys were telling was just tremendous, and it was like, absolutely. I sat there and watched the whole match, and even though I didn't understand a word, the commentators were saying it was such a great match. And again, you know, great professional wrestling tells the story in the ring where you don't even need the
absolutely.
Commentators.
I really believe that. And I think the greatest commentators are the golf commentators. I would like to see some of them commentate wrestling, and they with a very low tone of voice and leave the action to the ring.
So you're not a big fan of Joey Styles, per se?
Oh, I'm a big fan of everybody in wrestling. Joey Styles, too.
I thought I could put you on the spot on that one. How about maybe some memories of commentators, Gordon Solie back in the day, Jim Ross.
Gordon Solie was great. Jim Ross is great.
Lance Russell?
Oh, he's great, too. I'll take you through just a little bit of history.
Sure.
My father, Dory Funk Sr., was in the Amarillo territory, and Eddie Graham was there. And my father had a philosophy that you should always give back to wrestling, or give back to the sport that makes you a living. And he tried to sell the credibility of professional wrestling, and he tried to sell wrestling as this great sport. Eddie Graham was there at the same time. Eddie, a very close friend of my father's, went to Florida. And during the time that Eddie Graham was in Florida, Bill Watts was there. And Bill Watts studied Eddie Graham when he was in Florida. And then Bill went to New Orleans, where he was working with Jim Ross. And Bill insisted on credibility in the wrestling business. And if you watch Jim Ross, anytime he commentates, he always talks about the athleticism of the athletes in the ring. So it's kind of a roundabout way, but my father had an influence on this business that you may sometimes see in watching Jim Ross as he commentates wrestling. He always talks about the athleticism of the wrestlers, and that was a principle of the wrestling business that my father lived by. And I kind of grew up under it, and probably always will try to keep wrestling as credible as possible. As my father said, it was a fabulous business for my family, and I should always protect it.
Absolutely. So what was kind of your thoughts when Vince McMahon kind of cut kayfabe off in the early 90s? Was that something that kind of didn't set well with you, or did you kind of understand where things were going that time?
No, I can understand. There's a reason for everything that Vince has done, and it has led to better and better business.
Mm-hmm.
WrestleMania was, this last one was the second highest grossing ever, you know, so, what he's done has been good for business, and that's what, wrestling promotion is all about. It's a, it is a business, and as a professional wrestler, what, anybody wanting to become a professional wrestler needs to understand that they're within this business, the companies are looking for what can you do for the company, not what can you do for yourself. And that's the way people are hired, and that's the way to become superstars, is what can they do for the company.
Sticking with the kind of the current scene in professional wrestling, is there any young wrestlers you see out there today that kind of reminds you of a young Dory Funk Jr. yourself?
Whoa. I think the door is wide open for one. And the reason is, as we've been talking about, all the wild and crazy stuff. I mean, you can't go to a wrestling match without hearing about cages, fighting backstage, fighting in the bowels of the building, fighting with brass knuckles, fighting with sticks, fighting with gloves, hitting someone over the head with a chair. I think there's an opportunity. I think there's a real opportunity right now for someone that can really wrestle and get over with the fans and do a good job of it. I think there's an opportunity for, so to speak, a Dory Funk Jr. to come along right now and step up and draw tremendous money. And that is what the wrestling business is about. It's about drawing money, and I had tremendous success as NWA World Champion for 4 years. I think the opportunity is open right now for the next one. And I am looking for that next great wrestler that can satisfy what I think the wrestling fans need right now.
Well, maybe the next Dory Jr. is going to come out of the Funkin' Conservatory.
He could. You know, I've got a grandson who's here. It's very possible. Actually, he's finishing up school right now, and we hope he's going to be back, hopefully this summer. But I've got a grandson, Dory the Fourth, that I would like to see him step in that place.
I want to take you back all the way to the kind of towards the beginning, and I don't think a lot of the today's wrestling fans really appreciate the history of NWA and what it meant. The NWA title was, you know, legendary, one of the most over, well received. It was the most coveted thing really in professional wrestling at that time.
Absolutely.
What did it mean to you when you won the title, and what did it mean to you when they, you know, told you that, you know, we want you to be our NWA heavyweight champion?
The beginning came at International Wrestling Alliance meeting. My father, my brother, and I were there, and my father said, "Guys, there's going to be an opportunity to win the World Heavyweight Championship." And he set Terry and myself down, and he was getting ready to talk about us making a concerted effort to train one of us to be that person. And before he could speak, Terry jumped up and said, "Let's get behind Junior." So it was kind of an emotional time, but they decided that they would train me the best that they could for a match upcoming with Gene Kineski, who was the current champion. And we worked hard, and it was not just through my efforts, but through the efforts of my father and my brother, that I became qualified and became NWA World Heavyweight Champion. And it was that match in Tampa, Florida that changed my life. I mean, as I said earlier, there's never a day goes by that somebody doesn't ask me about the NWA World Championship.
What do you think of today? I know the NWA Championship is still out. I think Colt Cabana just won it. What do you think about today when you hear, you know, NWA Champion? Has it lost all its luster, or do you think the NWA could still be? I mean, obviously when TNA started up, they were NWA TNA. Do you think the NWA at some point could maybe make a resurgence as well?
You know, it would take a lot of effort on someone's part to bring it back to where it was. It would take a change in a business, and I'm not sure the business is ready to change in that way. Because in those days, there were 34 territories, each territory run by a dominating personality promoter.
Right.
Each territory with earning a living for 30 to 40 families. There was not a town in the United States with a population of over 25,000 people that didn't have regularly scheduled wrestling matches. It was a very different business in those days. And it was a tremendous honor to be NWA World Champion. And everybody throughout the country was behind it. I don't really see that you could unite everybody to get behind a project such as what the NWA World Championship meant to the National Wrestling Alliance at that time. I think the business is right for it. It would be basically up to, if it were ever to happen again, it would take a concerted effort by WWE and or the McMahon family.
You know, I really like when TNA really came into existence, I said back in 2002, they were the NWA TNA, and I thought if nothing else, they were definitely geared towards more pro wrestling, you know, total nonstop action wrestling. And that seemed like to me that I liked the TNA back when they first started up, even though they were on the Wednesday night pay-per-views, which was not a good business model to go to weekly pay-per-views, especially without television. But I liked they put the emphasis on wrestling, and it really, you know, with the tie-in of NWA, it really seemed like it was more of a wrestling product at that time.
Right. You've got to really get it done right, you've got to have the unique wrestler that can understand that it's not only wrestling that he's selling, but it's also entertainment to the wrestling fans, and it's also a great wrestling match every time out. There are no exceptions. It must be every time, and it must be exciting to the wrestling fans. And I think the spot is wide open, but few people are looking in that direction right now. But when the right person comes, it will happen.
I want to ask you, too, about Japan. Obviously, you had some great matches in Japan. Working with Giant Baba, maybe talk about him as a promoter and maybe some of your fondest memories working in the Orient.
Giant Baba was brilliant. He was a master as a promoter. He knew what the fans wanted. And he also did something unique. He brought over some of the very best talent that the United States has to offer. And he brought some tough guys in there. Including, as you said, Bruiser Brody, Stan Hansen, the Funk Brothers, Terry Gordy.
The Butcher.
Abdullah the Butcher.
Right.
He brought in some guys that would go and wanted to draw money, wanted to get over, so to speak, and could get over. And, he did a tremendous job of, giving the Japanese wrestling fans what they really wanted. My first trip over to Japan, I had two big matches. One was with Giant Baba. They were both world championship matches. The other was with Antonio Inoki. The Inoki match has been largely regarded as one of the greatest matches that ever took place in Japan, and is still available, on, as you say, on YouTube and mm-hmm. in many places. I also wrestled Giant Baba on that same trip. The Inoki match went to a one-hour draw, and the match with Giant Baba went to a 58-minute count-out. Incidentally, the match with Giant Baba was under unusual circumstances. In those days, they had no air conditioning, and we were in...
Oh. Wow.
Osaka, and it was so hot that Brute Bernard came out of the ring before I went in for my match. And Brute came into the dressing room, and he says, if anybody is out there for more than 5 minutes, they're going to be dead. So, it was the most demanding match I've ever had in my life. We did get through it. I did live through it, but that was about all I could say.
Now, obviously, the Japanese wrestling fans are totally different than the American wrestling fans. Can you kind of...
More so back in the old days. I mean, everybody came in a suit and tie, and they came to watch. And you had to understand when you were in the ring wrestling that they were interested in everything that took place, but they didn't make any noise. They were deathly silent.
Right.
And it threw some American wrestlers totally off. But for some reason, I could handle wrestling in front of a silent crowd. And so, the there as NWA champion, it got over tremendously. And then when Terry and I came together as tag team, we became the first American faces in Japan. And the Japanese fans just absolutely backed us tremendously, and I'm very grateful.
Now, obviously, the wrestling business of today in America is obviously different than it was back when you were in the business. And also, it's changed dramatically in Japan as well. Obviously, Giant Baba has passed away and went to his wife, and then the wife sold it. And New Japan's in different ownership hands these days. What's your thought on Japan? Obviously, it's not a hotbed of wrestling anymore. And have you been to Japan lately?
It's been about 3 years since I've been over there. But, you know, I went over from Japan Pro Wrestling. The Japanese wrestling. Tell me again what you asked me.
just in general, how the landscape of, I mean, when you were there, I mean, Japan, New Japan were king promotions, and nowadays they're still there, they're still in existence, but the heyday is definitely gone for those two promotions.
Television, I think, was the key. When I first went there, there were two television stations in Japan. I hope I get these right. NHK and MTV.
Right.
And one had a personal contract with Baba, one had a personal contract with Inoki. That was it, for wrestling television in Japan. And, later, Mr. Inoki, split from the company and took his television company. Baba split from the company and took his television company. But wrestling with only two stations in Japan with networks, it was huge, had a huge audience. And I think that's been diluted with, there were only two companies that had importance in Japan, New Japan Pro Wrestling and All Japan Pro Wrestling. And it's become highly diluted now with small companies, multiple small companies, and everybody trying to open a company. It's become so diluted that they don't really have the attention that they had before. Wrestling was the first. I remember when I was over there seeing pictures of when television first came out, huge crowds watching television at department stores, and you look out there on the picture and you see that it was wrestling on television that they were watching. Somewhat, it's the same, in a little different way here in America, that during the days, as we say, during the older days of the Amarillo territory, there were only three stations in Amarillo. So within that area, within our territory, and just an average rating would be a 33.
Wow.
And, you know, so within our territories, we were television superstars, even more so than it is today, because it is so diluted. There's, it's highly competitive. There's Dancing with the Stars. There's the NFL, the NBA, NCAA Finals, mm-hmm. All competition to professional wrestling, and then direct competition. And now it's considered a really great rating if you get a 3.8.
Right.
And just being there, your average in the old days would have been a 33. And I know we pulled more than that. So.
I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I didn't mean to cut you off there. I wanted to ask you, in the 80s, you had a run with Vince. You and Terry were teaming up in the WWF at that time, and you had, I think, a pretty good run. Obviously, you got to be part of WrestleMania II. You beat Tito Santana and JYD. And of course,
Tito's another West Texas.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Talk about that run and talk about how things were different then in WWF. And then along the same lines, I believe Terry left, and then they put you with Jimmy Jack Funk.
Right. I absolutely had a ball working for Vince with WWE, both with my brother. And we did some fabulous stuff with Junkyard Dog. And Terry had to leave for personal reasons, and he left me with Jimmy Jack, who is Jesse Barr, who is a good friend and does a great job. I absolutely loved working for Vince and WWE, both then as a wrestler and later as a trainer, and then more recently with FCW as a trainer. And the pay is very good when you work for Vince McMahon.
How did the ring name Haas Funk came up?
Nobody's going to believe this. Nobody's going to believe this. But when I was in high school, my coach used to call me Haas. So it was not a stretch of the imagination as much as everybody thinks it was. And I understand the reasons for it, for marketing and things like that. But Haas Funk. I've been called Haas many, many times, way, way before.
I think it was a Texas thing, but I'm thinking, if I have the great Dory Funk Jr. on my roster, I'm going to call him Dory Funk Jr. You know, why would they call him Haas?
I agree with you. Yeah. But by the same token, I understand why it was done. It's not for business. See, the company is all business.
Right.
And they do what's best for the company. And wrestlers that... really, what we teach our kids here is we want you to do what's best for the company that you want to work for, and train yourself that way. And that works. That not only works for wrestling; it works for any job.
How did the 1996 Royal Rumble come up?
It's strange how things work. A phone call from. Can't remember who. I was in Japan at the time, and they called and asked me if I would make the Royal Rumble. Can't remember exactly who the agent was that called, but there was a time in wrestling business that there were no contracts. Back in the day, so to speak, in the Amarillo territory, if we wanted Eddie Graham to send us Jack Briscoe, it would be a phone call from the Amarillo office to the Florida office. Jack Briscoe would show up, and he'd walk in and say, "Who am I working with? Here's my plane ticket." We'd pay him for his plane ticket. He'd work. We'd send him his money. If he was happy, he'd come back. Generally, the pay was in cash, and it was a very word-of-mouth business. Same is true for Andre the Giant. I was running the Amarillo territory. I would call Vince McMahon Sr. I'd say, we'd like to have Andre the Giant. These are the dates, 2 weeks. Vince would say, okay. And I'd say, how much should we pay him? Vince would say, make him happy. And if Andre was happy, he would come back. If he wasn't, he wouldn't be back. But he did. He came back again and again for us. And, it was just a bit of a different business than it is now.
How does Vince McMahon Jr. differ from Vince McMahon Sr.?
Well, everything currently is done by contract. And probably done by contract because people learn to do business better and better. Vince Sr. was, it was known, well, Vince was a member of the National Wrestling Alliance. And it was, he was known that his word was good, and whatever he said, you could count on it. It was good as a contract. And I'm sure the same is, true with Vince Jr., but you're going to see a contract.
I want to ask you, too, about the 2009, they inducted you into the WWE Hall of Fame along with your brother Terry. One thing I always heard is that when you guys spoke, they gave you a very limited time to speak. What was your thoughts on that?
They're producing a television show.
Okay.
And everything has to be according to schedule. And there was a big clock that we looked at.
Said, yeah.
Seconds to go. but once again, it's their production, and the wrestlers should be there to do what the company wants. And they're a very good company to work with. I can say nothing but good about them.
Yeah, it's just too bad. You know, I would have loved to hear you and Terry talk about the golden age.
I had a 30-minute speech, actually.
Yeah. I think somebody told me that when you two came up, you had like 4 or 5 minutes to go up there, and both of you combined to talk for 5 minutes. It's like,
that's right.
Oh my gosh.
Terry was saying, hurry up, and I thought he was saying, take your time.
We're going to close it out quickly with Dory Funk Jr. We do appreciate his time here. As you look back on your career, any regrets, anything you wish you could go back and change as you reflect on your career?
I don't know. Yeah, you always think of things, but overall, I've had a fabulous life through pro wrestling, and I'm very fortunate to be able to continue doing what I love right now. And I want to thank all the wrestling fans for the support for so long. And just thanks to you. I appreciate the interview, and enjoy being on Gerwick.net. Gerwick.net is the place where we go every day. And I'm on your website, checking to see what's the latest in professional wrestling.
Wise man, I must say.
Thank you.
Hey, Dory, is there a book deal in your future?
It's already written, but it's not published yet. So,
okay.
Hopefully it'll be coming out. So it will come out.
Okay.
But everything, additional chapters keep coming out.
So as they postpone it, you got another chapter written about it.
Oh,
you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Something else happens every day.
Well, Dory, we thank you for your time. We're talking to the legend Dory Funk Jr., the former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, a member of the WWE Hall of Fame. We can't thank him enough for his time. And once again, check out dory-funk.com for all the information about Dory's career and, of course, the Funk and Conservatory. And thanks again, Dory. We really appreciate your time today.
Okay. And if you'd like to become a professional wrestler, go online, check out our site, and give us a call. Thank you very much, Steve.